This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Shoaib Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Joyce Goh. President Donald Trump of the United States tweeted yesterday that his country's team has arrived in North Korea to make arrangements for the summit between himself and Kim Jong-un. This signals that the meeting that the U.S. president abruptly canceled last week is back on track. Online, we have Stephen Innes, head of trading in Asia Pacific with a wonder in Singapore. Good morning, Stephen. Thank you so much for joining us. Is anybody taking tweets coming from Donald Trump seriously anymore?
On again, off again, on again, off again, and on again. It's quite puzzling, but I think this time around all roads are leading to Singapore. It looks like there's some definite headwinds that have been alleviated on the way to the summit. And the market seems to be breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief, although this is only, you know, a minor hiccup in the overall risk narrative that the markets are going through. As we've seen so often in the past, dealing with this North Korea issue, there's usually a lot of more discussion than actual market impact. So, you know, we're seeing a little bit of rally today and in some key risk assets, but I assume those will be quickly faded as there's bigger pictures developing in the background, especially around the U.S. and China trade scenario that'll probably weigh more significantly than this summit. You know, realistically, everybody knew something was going to break on this front, given that this is just this path to prosperity offered by the world right now to North Korea is just too tempting to pass up. So, you know, not really surprising on this front.
Stephen, let's take a look at emerging markets. Do you expect foreign fund outflows from the region to continue? And could you share with us your take on the market trends?
Yeah, you know, it really becomes a dollar trade because it's been the stronger U.S. dollar that's been acting like a wrecking ball in local and even, you know, your other emerging global emerging markets. Strong U.S. dollar weighs negatively on local bond markets. They have to compete putting interest rates higher to compete in the bond market. And also when you go to servicing your debt, it makes it that much more expensive, especially for foreign-owned debt. So this will continue to weigh negatively, in my view, while the dollar gets ironed out over the short-term narrative. Of course, you know, we have to look at a dollar, the U.S. dollar in the broader picture. Right now we're seeing some short-term momentum based on shifting growth narratives that really apply more directly to central bank policy, whereas I think the longer-term fundamental risks for the U.S. dollar to weaken remain intact. But, you know, this is stuff that the market needs to iron out. And I think if we develop and we go through towards the end of 2018, I think what will happen is the dollar starts to weaken, then the emerging markets start to react more positively. But in the meantime, I think there could be some more pain in the emerging market space to come.
Stephen, and from the American point of view, is a strong dollar good for the policy to increase jobs, to increase trade? Isn't a strong dollar somewhat contrary to that desire to export more?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, from my view, I think it's clear that the U.S. administration would much favor a weaker dollar. However, it's really hard to argue how the market picks up on sentiment, which is primarily based on central bank narrative. So, for instance, on the one hand, we have the Federal Reserve Board that's, you know, clearly going to be raising interest rates because the U.S. economy is doing so well. Then when you take the second most traded currency in the world, the euro, for instance, it's been, you know, surprise indexes have been on the decline. So the economic data has been going down, which suggests that the ECB will remain dovish. This was wildly unexpected at the beginning of the year, mind you, and this is why a lot of people are caught by surprise, because we actually thought the euro would be trading a lot more stronger at this point in time. But yeah, this is what happens when short-term dynamics start to take over the equation. There's very little that can be done, because the market's really picking up on the short-term growth narratives, which are all part and parcel to central bank policy.
Now, Stephen, earlier you said that this will be primarily a dollar story, right? But I'm looking at spot returns for Asian currencies against the greenback, and we've got a pretty diverse spectrum here. You've got the yen, the Thai baht, the renminbi, the ringgit, all in positive territory, at least year to date. Where else you've got the likes of the rupiah, the peso, and the rupee, you know, having these outsized negative returns, at least to the layman. So how do you explain this divergence here among Asian currencies against the greenback?
Well, there's certainly idiosyncratic storylines that would apply to the Philippines. You know, we're dealing with two sizable deficits, both budget and trade deficits, which, you know, weigh quite negatively on the peso outlook. So that's the one negative there. India is obviously suffering because of the higher oil prices, because they're a massive importer of oil. So even if the dollar was trading in a more favorable position against the basket, I think the rupee would continue to struggle given the higher oil prices, and then the rupee on the other hand, just basically because there a lot of their foreign debt is held in U.S. dollars, like almost about 40% plus. When the stronger dollar starts to kick in, they tend to be one of the few countries in the region that tend to see outflows first. Now, whether this carries forward to a lot of the other regions, it really portends into how strong the U.S. dollar actually gets. If the U.S. dollar continues to strengthen, I think this will probably trigger some additional outflows and counter a lot of the gains that we've already made in the emerging market currencies this year.
Stephen, what's your outlook on the ringgit?
Well, you know, it's a little confusing right now because, you know, right now we're mired in this political malaise, and you know, it seems to me that all the discussions are really going to be focusing around government debt. So my guess, and you know, when we're dealing with political risk, it's really just a calculated guess, given the political risk is so very, very difficult to quantify. Depending on what road we go down to supplement the shortcoming from the GST, what the government's going to, when the government's going to lay down their cards on the table, how the debt agencies are going to react to a possible shortfall in the government coffers. You know, all this is a guessing game. So generally, when we're in this guessing game narrative, you'll see risk tend to back off quite a bit. So my feeling over the short term is that the ringgit will probably gravitate more to the 4 level. I think that'll be a fairly strong resistance point, but I can certainly see it moving to that level. More so if we start to see the external factors kick in, i.e. a stronger U.S. dollar and the trend for emerging markets to continue to unwind. So this is really predicated on, you know, both those view, one, uncertain political landscape and a stronger U.S. dollar performance over the short term.
Stephen, some say the information coming out from Malaysia had spooked foreign investors. Do you agree, or foreign fund outflows was more of a regional fund flow trend? And as an experienced trader as yourself, would you prefer more or less information?
Well, I think more information is always better. But as you can see, you know, transparency is great. I don't think the foreign investors reacted all that negatively, to be honest with you, given, you know, the possible reactions we could have had. I mean, we saw the knee-jerk reaction that the market had on the outcome, but, you know, cooler heads prevailed after the cooling off period. So I think this is all part and parcel to the fact that the government's been incredibly transparent and actually moving forward on a transparent view. So provided they're going to continue down this road, I think it's quite favorable. So more information is welcome. Mind you, they've got a lot to work out here. There's a lot of risk involved. I think foreign investors are eager to get back in. I think some of the levels on the local bond markets look very attractive. I think the currency level looks quite attractive relative to other regional peers. But again, you know, for my view, it all boils down to this dollar. And I still strongly believe that the U.S. dollar is going to remain on the front foot over the next short term. So even from my trader perspective, I'm more inclined not to jump back into the regional currencies right now. And the ringgit would be no exception, because at the moment, the political risk is just too high.
Hey, Stephen, speaking about political risk, we just had this breaking news from a few hours ago. So it's not just domestic stuff, but also globally. You've got Italy, who is, that's possibly headed for a possible constitutional crisis. The populists over there have pulled out of a bid to form government. Now, earlier you mentioned that euro is the second most widely traded currency in the world. So will this add another layer to geopolitical risk on top of what we're seeing with the talks between the U.S. and North Korea, on top of what we're seeing, you know, in other parts of the world? What does that do for your geopolitical risk meter right now?
Sure, I suggest everybody to buckle in this week. It's going to be busy. What we're looking at is quite ironic in Europe. You know, that we didn't form a government in Italy, so the market had a relief rally. So that tells me what were the options really like. You know, we could have seen the euro trade considerably lower if Savoni was put in as a finance minister. But fortunately, the president saw fit not to go down that road and came out really supporting the euro. Now, you know, given how emotions run in Italian politics, so this is far from over. As we've seen, as I said, a small relief rally in the euro. There is still that incredible threat of contagion, especially the waves of populism that are coming out of Italy. That is real. So the market's going to remain focused on that. And also there's Spain. We've got political risk in Spain right now. So, you know, the euro by no means is out of the fire right now. It's, perhaps out of the fire into the frying pan, so to speak. But I mean, there's still lots of risk in the euro landscape to go on right now. Notwithstanding the fact we're probably going to have the ECB lean coming up in June also, which should keep the euro quite offered in the market.
Thank you so much, Stephen. That was Stephen Innes, Head of Trading in Asia Pacific with Awanda in Singapore. We'll be back with a look at the top business stories of the day. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Market Watch. BFM 89.9. The Business Station. Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.